International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 70. The topic for this episode was, what is your dream job? In this show, we will hear from Kyle, Fred Trellis, Ed May, Vandermore, Scooter Vagabond, and Zencore. So stand by for the IDDFOS Dream Job episode, just in time for the tanking of the world economy. Back in a bit.
What's that?
It's the all clear, sir.
Good heavens, Wilson. What time is it?
It's about 6 o'clock, sir.
Ah, 1800, are they?
No, sir, that's at night.
Well, isn't it night?
No, it's the morning.
Oh, is it?
Did you drop off, sir?
No.
I thought you did. I mean, your eyes were closed.
I was just resting them, Wilson. I wasn't asleep. Very far from it.
Well, you see, with all the responsibilities you have, sir, I wouldn't blame you for taking 40 winks.
I did not take 40 winks, Wilson.
Well, I'm sure you were 100% alert all the time, sir.
I was.
Even if you were snoring.
That's enough.
Well, it has been a while. It's been more than 6 weeks, I think, since episode 69. Actually, maybe 8 weeks. 2 months? Has it been 2 months since episode 69? Very, very fortunately for me, I've had very high-quality material to add into the feed as part of the IDDFOS lineup. And that, of course, is the Gutter Skypes. And I'd like to thank everyone out there that's given a listen, that has tried checking out actual play recordings of role-playing games being played over Skype. I feel extremely fortunate for having hooked up with the fellows that I have. Mark Kinney is an excellent game master, and I was very glad to hear from him. And Blind Geek and Andros are very good players. And Blind Geek is no small potatoes as far as game mastering goes either. So there's a pro group going on here. Andros has experience GMing as well. I'm the real total noob of the group, so far as the things go, and it's been 25 years since I've gotten into role-playing games. But anyway, thank you. Thank them. It's excellent. It's cool. Very glad that Gutter Skypes is in the feed, and that I, not only did I not have nothing between International Detector Dragons from Outer Space episodes. How do I put this? Not only did I have nothing, I didn't have International Detective Dragons from Outer Space episodes for 2 months. But luckily, I had a very high-quality item in the feed while you were waiting for this episode. If you were waiting for this episode. I'm sorry that it's been such a while. And now I'm done being sorry. Now I'm going to get on with the show. Hello, everyone. Let me just put the sound of a wheel mouse being scrolled into the background of this audio so that I can check out my notes. Oh, while I'm showing appreciation and thanking folks for downloading and trying out the Gutter Skypes, I'll show appreciation for two other people. Thank you very much, Smallhoof. You know why. Also, thank you, Dan Leary. Dan Leary knows why, too. Quick note of news from Wes of Stealth Geek Unlimited, which I was very pleased to find out. Terry Pratchett was made a knight. New Year's Honors, an article. And, of course, I'll put the link in the Kutikatingatangatungs. The article explains what that's all about. But he is now Sir Terry Pratchett. I don't know how he feels about that. I'm excited about it. I would, of course, be enormously excited about being made a knight. I don't think that it's something... I guess it depends on who you talk to. Some folks, I suppose, think that it's given out like candy. I don't know that that really is the case, but... And I also don't know how Terry Pratchett would feel about it. He doesn't exactly, if you go by his writings, he isn't exactly what you would call a devout royalist. And I don't know what his opinion of the peerage is. I don't know. I don't know how he feels about it, but that's interesting news. Thank you, Wes, for sending that our way. Very good news after that in my notes. Extremely good news. The Absolute Peach is returning for season 4. Now, I don't have a promo made for the Absolute Peach, but I've already threatened Ben and Joe that I was going to make one myself if I didn't see one on their site. But regardless of that, it may be better, actually, not. Don't wait for a promo from IDDFOS. You'll hear one in episode 71, but it's better just to go and check out the show yourself. Download Series 3. I think it's still up there and available. The Absolute Peach. Very fun stuff. I found a site while I was looking for something else entirely, as usual. Some fella that has taken action figures... or created action figures from scratch based on popular characters, I think primarily Star Wars, but he has applied the style of steampunk to Star Wars action figures. I don't know how else I can describe it. That really pretty much is it. If that sounds interesting and worth checking out, that's another link that I will put in the Kutikatingatangatungs. I don't have a lot under notes, and I think it's mainly because over the past 8 weeks, all of the things that I wanted to include in episode 70 as far as new and unusual information, I've forgotten because I didn't write it down. But I did write down that the background music for this episode that you're hearing underneath all of this is by Paul Berger. Or Birgit, depends on how you pronounce it, I suppose. B-E-R-G-E-T, Paul Berger. It sounds better to me pronounced that way. The album is called The Sierra Manuscript on Steel String Guitar, and you'll be able to get to that through IDDFOS main page and the link. And he's a bit, or look for that album on magnatune.com. Going to cut to a break. When we come back from the break, we'll go to an email. Nothing new, unusual, or different here. Back in a bit.
Now, men, how are we getting on? Are those barrels all bright and shining? Ah, Jones, we're having trouble with our pull-through.
Well, it's a bit sticky, sir.
Let me try.
I just say my right arm is not as powerful as it was of yesteryear, sir, through not having the quantity of chops to joint. Or joints to chop.
Yeah, oh. What have you got on the other end of this pull-through?
I think it's just a possibility it's got knotted, sir.
We must try some other means then, mustn't we? Just watch this, men, will you? It's a little wrinkle I learned in the last conflict. We tie the end of the pull-through to some immovable object. Now, let me see... Yes, this banister rail should serve the purpose.
Just like Roy Rogers ties trigger.
Well, roughly speaking, yes, got me back. There we are. Now, having tied the pull-through securely, take a firm hold of the rifle. Just give me plenty of room here, will you? Now then, all that's needed is a sharp jerk. So!
Oh, dear, I don't think the vicar's going to like that hole in his banister.
An email from Kyle. This is a response from Kyle, directly related to the show's topic. And the title of the email is My Ideal Job. Hey, Adam 5. Sorry for the delay. I'm still trying to dig out from all the podcasts I've downloaded. My problem is I keep finding new podcasts to listen to. This is a good and a bad thing. It is both. It's an enjoyable crisis, and it makes for tedious fun. That didn't come out right. Either that or it came out exactly right. I read two whole sentences of that letter. Did you notice? Two whole sentences before interrupting. I feel that I'm lucky in the fact that I'm very close to having my ideal job, programming computers for a large company. The only ways I can think of making my job better are have my coworkers understand what I'm trying to say the first time I say it, and the ability to use a Unix, Linux-like environment for programming. Nothing against Windows, but it's easier for me to think in Unix, Linux. I would also like to avoid worrying about business decisions and just worry about the technical decisions. I would also like to have realistic time frames and budgets. I think that is probably, that last one at least, is probably universal to every job, business, country in the world. Realistic time frames and budgets. Well, anything that I would have to say about that would be bitter and counterproductive. It would be very negative, and it would cast disparagement upon people who are less intelligent and less skilled than you. Far, far less intelligent and far, far less skilled than you, who have vast sums of money with which to decide that realistic time frames and budgets are for other people. I realize that my wishes are pure fantasy, but I have to dream. Keep up the good work, and I hope you find a new job soon. As always, Kyle, also known as Hobbit, striving to make the world better one program at a time. I, too, hope I'll find a new job soon. I've only had one or two real moments of panic since July of last year. I imagine I'll start to get more of them as time goes on, but trying to keep that out of the show, so I'll keep it out of the show. Well, that's a good thing. I'm very glad that you are close to your ideal job. I usually, when I think ideal job or dream job, I usually consider the phrase, what are you best at and enjoy most? The closer you can get to doing something like that for a living, whatever that is, the better off I suppose you are. The problem again is there's that realistic time frames and budgets thing. People make money by squeezing the shit out of people who produce what they're actually selling. People make incredible amounts of money, if not by lying through their teeth outright, daily, for a living, a very good living, than by making promises that can't be kept because they have no idea what the work is that's required to fulfill those promises. Nor do they particularly care. But they do end up with a considerable amount of cash, property, and assets at the end of it all. And they don't particularly have to know how to do anything except lie effectively and make promises with a certain degree of sincerity and just be people persons, you know? People that are really outgoing. People that know how to inspire confidence and organize and keep an eye on the competition and stay ahead of the competition by avoiding realistic time frames and budgets. I guess I went ahead and did it anyway. I guess I went ahead and made disparaging remarks about the folks that are in charge. What can I say? I'm just not having a good attitude lately. Let's change that. Let's go to a break and then come back from the break and then hear from Fred Trellis. Back in a bit.
Having a problem, sir.
The walker's name, what is it?
Walker, sir. Do you mean to say you've got a walker named Walker?
Yes, sir.
That's unusual, eh, Cups?
Oh, I don't know, sir. I once knew a tailor named Taylor.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, perhaps you're right. Well, go on. What's this Walker's record?
His record, sir?
He's got a record, hasn't he?
Has he got a record, Wilson?
Well, I don't think he's ever been found out, sir.
No record, sir.
Well, is he good?
Oh, yes. He's very good, sir.
Well, how the hell can he be good if he hasn't got a record?
I don't think I quite follow you, sir.
Are you keeping track of this, Cuts?
I'm doing my best, sir.
Look, is he one of the London to Brighton walkers?
Oh, no, sir, no. I think he's one of the Warmington-on-Sea walkers.
Sea walkers?
No, Jay Walker, sir.
Jay Walker?
Yes, Joe Walker. That's his full name.
I know what his name is, but how do you know he's a walker?
Well, because he told us so.
Yes, that's right, he did, sir. He distinctly said, I'm Walker.
Surely he said, I'm a walker.
No, sir, no. Not a walker. He said, I'm Jay Walker.
Have you got all this down, Cuts?
Well, I think so, sir.
Well, try and keep up. Now, gentlemen, when is he due for call-up?
Oh, very soon. He goes for his medical next week.
Yes, well, very well. Leave it with me. I'll see what I can do. Good day.
Thank you very much, sir.
See them out, Captain.
This next up is a forum, an entry from the forums from Fred Trellis. And Fred writes, well, just how depressing do you want the answer to be? It's the kind of question where one is almost forced to give an upbeat answer, and I cannot. No matter that the subject leads one to daydream about the perfect future, to wish upon a star for a clearly delineated utopia, where I take the starring role, and all is subservient to the merest whim of the great I that is am. That can only be positive and uplifting, right? Remember Zaphod Beeblebrox? How the hell can I spell that correctly 30 years after reading it? Who had an entire universe created just for him, and naturally, he was the most important thing in it. That's got to be positive, right? Yeah, right. I don't have a choice right now. I am forced into my dream job. I have no option. Being forced takes all the joy out of it. I want to be a writer. Not a hack pushing out articles for housekeeping magazines about the problems I had in buying a rug from IKEA or the latest development in soup spoon coiffure. Scientists breakthrough table placemat material technology, which wallpaper goes best on the north aspect wall of a well-lit barn conversion, it's not me, and certainly beyond my skills to be quite that focused. No. My thoughts are too chaotic and fast for a disciplined piece, and a rant, and a to-do, consult thesaurus. Add something witty and only tangentially connected here. Run where my brain takes me. A jumble of barely connected and half-finished thingamies, if thingamy is the word I want here, or indeed anywhere. I want to be the new Alan Corrin. The world needs a new one because the real one died last year. The world needs him, a wordsmith who spent his latter days in his own attic and words, cobbling together some light-hearted wool gathering for his bit on the side about golfing for cats. Why golfing for cats? In the introduction to one of his many books, he explained a survey recently showed that the highest-selling category of books were about golf. And the runner-up topic was, you guessed it, cats. The book, he honestly revealed, had no connection with either golf or cats. And cats taking up golf is clearly a non-starter. They lack opposing thumbs, for one thing. But since the punter had already parted with his dosh before discovering the disconnect between title and contents, it was no longer his, the writer's, problem. Except the moral question had to be analyzed, of course, much easier when mulled over a decent bottle, which is rather more affordable with the dubious book sales than without. I have read his output over the last approximately years, and am enlightened and enriched person because of it. Alan Corin is to my life the inverse of what golf is to cats. So that is it. Musing over conceptual chains delights me. The delight felt from researching the word wool gathering on the internet, because it is a word that Alan used to describe much of what he did, and discovering, in short order, two other words, carphology and flossulation. Now, Fred gives a link here that probably directs us to his discovery of those other two words. I tried the link. It required me to be registered with whatever service it was there, www.bmj.com, but we can go ahead and look up carphology and flossulation on our own and see what we find. But Fred Trellis explains here that they are Greek and Latin physical equivalents still in use, the one being related to the longest word in the English language, which already was lying around in my head, namely, flossinaw sine hilipilification, which is the act of valuing something as useless, which someone has done, and which is why no one else would give me a job, which is why I have to do something myself, and I always wanted to be Mr. Corin. Here's my chance, opportunity, and necessity all rolled into one. Dirk Gently was correct. Yes, to sit warm and loved and to cobble something together from disparate sources, such as random concepts lying around the interwebs, half-remembered jokes from old-time radio, coincidentally serendipitous coincidences, Stephen Fry's vocabulary and simple plagiarism that someone else finds worth the 10 minutes reading time. That's better than sex, that is. Which is yet another job opportunity probably denied me. Forget the writing, just the musing would suit me. I am a daydream believer in that I believe strongly in daydreaming for its own sake. Not for any material benefit. Every sentence that I cause to appear in pixels gives rise to between 2 and 5 reverberations, any one of which might be worth following up in a daydream. For example, can one really follow a reverberation? Are any coincidences ever not coincidental? Fingummy, what do I really mean? Can cats really play golf? First thought is no, mainly because they are castrated and therefore have no... This single page has given rise to a good day's worth of musing and tea drinking. George Carlin said, "Someone has to think about this weird stuff, and apparently I've been appointed." He is now sadly disappointed, but someone needs to think the weird things, or they simply won't get thought. I could do that. And that from Fred Trellis, who I thoroughly believe would be a most enjoyable person to read in any periodical, blog, etc., on a national and international scale. This is a talented fellow, and happily, we here at IDDFOS are getting the result of his wordsmithing. Unhappily, not enough other people are. I hope that can change. We are going to cut to a... And in the meantime, of course, I'm not going to lose this opportunity once again to recommend the podcast Harmony Factory Bopac. That's Fred Trellis's podcast. Check it out. Go to it via the link through the IDDFOS homepage. Thank you. Thank you very much, Fred Trellis. Excellent forum entry. Excellent feedback for the show topic. And we're going to go to break now. And when we come back from the break, we will get an audio file from Ed May. Back in a bit.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Jonesy.
Did they let you off in?
No. They want to see my books, and as I don't keep any books, that was the end of that.
Oh, dear. You know, I think there's only one way to get you out of this, Joe.
What's that?
We shall have to make sure you don't pass your medical.
How can you do that?
Well, there's a little wrinkle we used to employ. Fraser!
Right.
Bring that ladder over, will you?
Come on, there, sir.
Right. Now, Joe, take your shoes and socks off.
What for?
You ain't got flat feet, have you?
Of course I haven't.
Well, you soon will have.
Yeah. Here's the ladder, Joe.
Right, thanks, Fraser. Now, Joe, all you've got to do, you keep jumping off this ladder and remember to land flat-footed.
Oh, I'm not doing that, hurt me.
Well, only at first. You'll soon get used to it.
Oh, there's nothing to it, laddie.
Well, look, you start from the bottom step and you work up.
And remember to land flat-footed.
Right, now off you go, walk up.
Well, all right. I just hope you know what you're doing.
I'll start clapping as he jumps.
Right, very good, Mr. Godfrey. Ready, Joe? Jump!
Oh! One.
Up you go again. Con right. Jump!
Oh! Two.
Right, again.
Oh!
Three.
Oh!
Four.
Five. 496.
The third step. Ready? Jump.
Go! 497. That's a lot. That is a lot. I am not doing any more.
Man, you have no stamina.
No.
This next up, an audio file from, as I said, I used to refer to him only as Ed. Now I think I'm just going to go ahead and say Ed May, because the gentleman is a performer, he is a public figure, he is an accomplished puppeteer, and we've been lucky enough to get his input for the show for quite a while now. Folks, take a tip and follow the example of Ed and send in your own audio files. That 206 area code thing that we lost, well, yes, we lost it, is not entirely necessary, certainly not if you've got a computer to listen to this on. Or gather it with, hook up the old microphone and go ahead and make an MP3 of your own. Send it in. Think I won't play it? Think again. It says so in my little sidebar there. But without further ado, let us hear from Ed May. And this is his audio.
Adam, this is Ed, the puppeteer. How are you? I'm taking you up on your offer to receive an audio file instead of an email. I always plan to send in an email in response to one of your shows, and then I procrastinate and don't do it. Don't make myself sit down and actually type up. So I thought I'd send an audio file. We'll see how this goes. And I think I'm a better talker than I am a writer. I'll let you be the judge of that after you listen to this. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. Hope everything's going good for the job search and wonderful things like that. Responding to episode 69, where you were saying, what was your dream job, or what would your dream job be? Well, my dream job is exactly the job I have now, which is being a puppeteer. And I've wanted to be a puppeteer since I was 5 years old, and I'm actually doing it. I realize exactly how blessed and fortunate that I am that the thing I said as a kid, which was my dream job that I wanted to grow up and be, I actually am. And I've been a professional puppeteer for about 17, maybe closer to 18 years now. And I've, you know, supported myself, support a wife and a child, and done pretty well doing that, being a puppeteer. Now, you've been in the performing arts. You know that the pay can be very up and down. You know, I've had times where we were living on Easy Street and had times where we were, you know, scrounging change out of the couch to put gas in the car and things like that. Actually, for a while, for about 5 years, I was on retainer with a puppet group, and they paid me a monthly salary just to be available, just because I was me, which is actually pretty fair in my opinion. But anyway, since then, I've actually had to actually work for the money. So, you know, what are you going to do? But yeah, being a puppeteer is the only thing I've ever really wanted to do, and I'm extremely, you know, I got to say, extremely blessed and fortunate that I've been able to turn it into a career. I've had the opportunity to go a lot of places with a couple of the touring groups I've worked with and see some great stuff and meet some great folks. I've had a lot of great opportunities. I've been on some, you know, series and videos and films, and had the opportunity to work with the Jim Henson Company on a couple of projects and meet a lot of the people I idolized growing up, and actually perform a lot of the characters that I grew up watching on Sesame Street and The Muppet Show, so that was really cool. But, you know, I've always wanted to be a puppeteer. I guess that's the main thing I want to say, is just that I'm amazed that I am actually doing what I always said I wanted to do. I don't know if I can put it any clearer than that. One thing that I always sort of fantasized about going out and doing live performances, whether it be for a school or for, you know, a general audience or families and things like that, I always had this fantasy that there'd be this kid out in the audience watching, and they would see me or another puppeteer up there performing, and they would say, "Oh my gosh, that's a job. You know, people actually do that. That's something I could do. I could be a puppeteer." You know, it's a little different if you see folks puppeteering. Well, if you see puppets on television or film, you normally don't see a puppeteer working them. And there's that little bit of disconnect. I mean, you see people in movies, you see people on television, but they don't seem real somehow. It's like that separation makes them less real. But when you see someone live on stage, an actor or even a puppeteer, you know, operating a character, it brings a little more immediate, a little more intimate. And so I always had this fantasy that a kid somewhere in my 18 years would have seen me and said, "Hey, that's something I could do. That's something I could do as a job." So anyway, maybe I'm inspired some other future generations of puppeteers, which is a good or a bad thing. Depends on how you think about it. Anyway. Well, I just want to send you a short audio file. We'll see how this turns out. Hope everything is going well. As I said, hope the job hunt is going well. And until next time, take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And that is very good news to hear. I'm reminded, or at least I was reminded, as I was listening to it, of the comments that I made in IDDFOS number 14. That was the episode that began with a simple suggestion from the Norwegian Viking regarding tips on how to do dialects, and I ended up making the entire podcast, that entire episode, about vocal characterizations and dialects and things like that. But I did make mention of the fact that there are folks out there who perform for a living, and they have... What did I call it? Well, it was courage in general. It takes guts. It takes a lot of courage to do that for a living, to make your way in the world, in the arts. I mean, it's hard enough just to do it with a regular job. But it's even more difficult when you're dealing with something that normally is only used to sell things. When the highest paid versions of the arts, no matter what they are usually selling something. And it's really kind of sad. And it's very scary to actually try and just do good work on stage in whatever medium, whatever live medium you're working in. So I have a great deal. First of all, I'm extremely happy for you, and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. You've got an incredibly impressive performance history there, and it's certainly something to be proud of, and I'm very glad you were able to share that with us. Somewhat inspiring, that is, particularly in this transitional phase I'm going through. I've always been involved one way or another, even tenuously connected with theater, but for the past 16 years, not even close. Not even close. It'd be like saying, you know what? I'm not even going to go into it. I'm just going to thank Ed extremely much for an excellent audio and encourage folks to follow his example and send their own in. They're fun. They're good. They give us an idea what you sound like and what your thoughts are, and it's impossible, absolutely impossible, to have a typographical error in an audio. Did I just prove myself wrong with that last sentence? All right, we're going to cut to another break, and when we come back, we will hear from Vandermoor. Back in a bit.
Good heavens. It's a bomb.
What?
It's an unexploded bomb.
Ah, yes, I can see you now. What on earth are you doing down there?
Well, we're not waiting for a bus, sir.
Look out, the bomb's slipping. Don't let it hit the ground, it'll explode. Grab hold of it.
I'm doing my best, sir. It's heavy.
Get your knee under it, man. Like I'm doing.
Well, if you could sort of lower your end, sir, we might be able to ease it to the ground.
Don't be absurd, Wilson. The slightest movement could quite easily go off.
Why are the two of you sitting there with that thing across your knees? What is it, anyway?
I think it fell out of that plane. The one you thought was one of ours.
Good God! It's a bomb! It's a bomb!
Yes, we had realized that, sir.
But why are you nursing it like that?
Well, we're trying to...
Keep it still, Wilson.
All right, all right.
We're trying to stop it rolling on the floor.
Do you realize that thing could go off at any minute and do immense damage to the building? Whatever would head office think? Look, I'll go and get help. Now, don't go away!
I'm hardly likely to, am I?
Now, look here, sir. We can't sit here all day holding this thing.
If you don't stop jiggling it about, Wilson, we'll be sitting on a cloud with a heart.
Mr. Mannering, I got your sausages. I just come in. That's funny. Mr. Mannering!
I'm here!
Here? Where? Oh, I get it. You're doing a camouflage, aren't you? Ah, Mr. Mannering, that's very good. I can't see you at all.
I'm here!
Oh, I'll give up, Mr. Mannering. You're too good for me.
Just look down through that hole.
Oh, right, oh, Mr. Mannering. Huh? Oh, there you are. You no need to go to all this trouble just to hide from me, Mr. Mannering. Well, I can see you're busy, so I won't hang about. I just brought you some sausages. I'll leave them on the desk. I know you like a nice banger.
Yes, well, we've got one of our own down here.
Okay, this should be good.
Well, don't forget, they do have Tommy guns, which aren't exactly known for their...
Oh, that's true, that's true. They could be intending to shoot it up. Okay, that's good. I like that.
Glad you like it. I ain't all that enthused about it myself. You think you got problems? I'm from Iowa. Nobody from Iowa talks like this.
It's funny. I always took him for the bookish type, you know?
Yeah, impromptu barnstorming.
I meant to do that.
Exactly.
But Mark's a nice GM. Yeah. There aren't going to be any problems. Come on.
You don't know me very well, do you?
The Gutter Skypes.
This next now from Vandermore, it is a forum post, and it's a response to the actual play podcasts, the Gutter Skype episodes.
Hey, Adam. I heard you talk about the Skype Spirit of the Century game you're playing in, and being a longtime listener of yours, back when Sarah had a podcast of her own.
Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big in This? That would be Sarah and Nev, who together did indeed have one of the podcasts that I wouldn't miss. They're still up there. They're still available. Download them, folks. Give them a try. They're fun.
And a friend of Mark Kinney.
Did I just mess that up? Well, there's parentheses there that kind of sidetracked me just a tiny bit.
And being a longtime listener of yours and friend of Mark Kinney, I am definitely keep on listening to your games.
Okay.
I also heard about your re-listening to the actual play of the world's largest dungeon.
Yeah, I did. yeah. I don't know. Something wrong with me, I guess.
If you want to add in different games to your listening list, try out my podcast, The Game Master Show.
I have. Recommend other people try that out, too. We're going to have a link on the IDDFOS main page in the Kutikatingatungatungs, because he gives the link here, but of course it's easy enough to find. It's the Game Master Show. And he continues.
About half of our episodes are actual play, and marked as such. The rest are general advice, reviews of the games we play, and game designer interviews. I know we've never met, but hosting you in my room with Mick Bradley for Gen Con 2007, I feel I have. Good luck on your development work, and I eagerly await the next episode.
Thank you very much, Vandermore. Wow, was that your room that my cardboard cutout was in? That, yeah, folks, recent listeners here to IDDFOS may not quite get that reference. No, I have never met Vandermore. However, Mick Bradley and Kurt the Camera Guy both received in the mail from me a folded cardboard cutout of myself with a request to take them to Gen Con 2007, which they did. And so apparently the one that Mick Bradley had along with it, these were not full body things anyway. This is for new listener benefit. Sorry, folks. You know, you old-time listeners know this already. They were just from folded arms upward. There's pictures in the old archives from about folded arms up. So it was not a full body, tall, whatever, standy thing of me. I just wanted a kind of a presence there at Gen Con 2007. And so, yes, fortunately, through the good offices of Mick Bradley and Kurt the Camera Guy, I did show up there as a flat cardboard cutout picture. Wow, did that take a long time for me to get it? I wrote back Vandermore indicating that I thought that cutout had more depth and was better behaved than myself. And I think that's probably that's probably why I made a good first impression. Okay. I could have done better than that. I know. I'm sorry. I'm tired. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Tired. I'm going to cut to a break. Yeah. Another one. Yeah. Because I can. And when we come back, we'll hear some additional feedback on the gutter Skypes. There's not actually a lot. Very short. And, yeah, if anybody would like to just talk in general about the gutter Skypes, they've got their own little section on the forums. And there has been some limited response, but I know there's folks out there that would have stuff to say about it that just may not be making it there. IDDFOS forums have a section for the gutter Skypes. Do yourself a favor, sign up to the forums, and please, if you hated it, if you liked it, post something. Be fun. All right, so back in a bit.
Look out behind you!
Where?
You see. You look behind you. I could have hit you with this chair while you were turned away.
It was awfully good, sir.
Thank you, Wilson.
It wasn't fair, I wasn't ready.
No, Fraser, the boss won't be ready either. Now, look here, men. I want you to take particular note of the way I use the chair. You hold it upside down, like this, and then you lunge with the legs, like this. Lunge. Lunge.
Just like a lion tamer, sir. Hey, do you remember Uncle Arthur we saw one at Burton Mill Circus just before the war,
didn't we? That's right, yes, we did, yes. Awfully good, wasn't it?
Never mind Burton Mills or Coco.
Carried away.
And there you are, men. You can deal with a stormtrooper with a gun.
There's just one thing, sir.
Yes, Joan?
I haven't got any chairs in my shop.
Haven't you? Well, I'm sure you could look around and improvise some other weapon.
Perhaps you could make him sit on the bacon slicer, Jonesy. Shall I take his name, sir?
No, don't be facetious, Walker. This is a very real enemy that we have to deal with.
Let me take his name, sir. Please,
no,
sir, please.
Thank you, Fraser.
Oh, Fraser's going to have to go. Mr. Mannering?
Yes.
If Mr. Jones makes the German sit on the bacon slicer...
Yeah.
Well, will he get a little behind with his bacon ration?
All right, these quick responses having to do with the Gutter Skypes episodes, I don't know, maybe I wonder if I shouldn't be reading these on the Gutter Skypes themselves, but I may end up doing that, actually. But I think I better read them here now. I just can't figure out where exactly I would fit them in. It's like, no, let's not start the game, guys. I want to read you the feedback on the recordings, but I don't know. I'm sure they wouldn't have a problem with that if I went ahead and did that, but I'm just going to do them here first. Fred Trellis in the forums responded to the Gutter Skypes, and he wrote,
I have never gamed. I don't understand what you're doing, but I am enjoying listening to the sessions. As time goes by, I hope to understand more. I'm glad you decided to make these available.
Thank you very much, Fred Trellis, Well, good. It's most excellent. As you listen to more of the gameplay, you probably realize that I don't fully understand what I'm doing either most of the time. But the guys have been very patient with me, and I'm sure I'll get better as I go along. This next comment via email, kind of funny. It's from Scooter. No, it's not kind of funny. It is funny. It's from Scooter Vagabond, and he begins with a dictionary definition.
Gutter snipes, from the Urban Dictionary. Young kids that run around the streets causing trouble. Example, those gutter snipes are messing with your car. So, gutter skypes must be adult males that roleplay around the internet causing trouble. Example, gutter skypes are in your iTunes casting your pods.
My pronunciation is based on quick text spelling, leet spelling, a la text messaging. And it fits.
You should invite Mick Bradley for a guest appearance as an NPC.
Mick Bradley, consider yourself well, this is me jumping all over somebody else's thing. Consider yourself invited for a guest appearance as an NPC with the permission of the Game Master, whoever it happens to be. I don't think you'd actually have any kind of a problem in that department. More than welcome. Always, anytime, ever. Yeah, that'd be a blast.
Continue on. Your playing of roles further pleases us. Be careful about terrorism. Scooter Vagabond.
Okay. Thank you, Scooter Vagabond. What? Be careful about terrorism. All right. I wonder if that's a game reference that I'm not getting. It might be. It just seems so out of place as the last line in the whatever. Thank you very much, Scooter Vagabond, for your response to the gutter Skypes. It was I grinned and laughed when I read the leet spelling stuff about gutter Skypes. Adult males that roleplay around the internet causing trouble. Well, we do our best. And very quickly, very quick, short forum post from Zencore.
Just listen to it. Great stuff.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hope to have them many, many more posted as time goes by and as we play more games. All right. Well, this is the point where we go to that last break with the Ripley's Believe It or Not business. When we come back, we'll hear a short snippet from an old-time radio show, and then I'll get on with my ramblings and stuff like that. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the truth. This is Ripley. Believe it or not. Tustin Cleven was declared dead of the Black Plague on the ship Amelia in 1840. He was saved from being buried at sea only because friends won permission to bury him in New York. He revived in an undertaking establishment and lived for another 58 years, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a victory castle.
Captain Mannering, Captain Mannering.
What is it, Pike?
Bottoms!
I beg your pardon?
Bottoms! Bottoms, bottoms and tops!
What are you talking about, boy?
Our uniform, trousers and caps, sir. They've arrived.
But why didn't you say so in the first place? Where are they?
Mr. Wilson's just bringing them in, sir.
Give me a hand, Pike.
Oh, right, Mr. Wilson.
There we are.
Shall I unpack them, Mr. Mannering?
Oh, yes, yes. Let's have a look at them.
All right.
Have you signed for them, Wilson?
Yes, sir. There should be 21 pairs of trousers here.
Well, there's 14 of us. That means 1.5 pairs each. How many caps, Pike?
13, sir.
One short. This could cause trouble, Wilson.
Well, perhaps you could give the one without a cap an extra pair of trousers.
What good would that do?
Well, they could be for, you know, a special river crossing squad, sir. Once on the other side, they could change into the dry ones. I mean, you know, exercises.
Why only on exercises?
Well,
I'm sure the sight of you in your underpants would unnerve even the SS.
Mr. Menrin, I've got an idea.
Yes, Pike?
As we've only got 5 rifles, well, supposing we let the one without a cap have a rifle all the time?
Well, that would only upset our rifle rotor.
Oh.
What's more, the man who has a rifle doesn't have a water bottle. So that, in turn, would mess up the water bottle rotor.
And I can't alter all the rotors.
I agree. You've taken great pains with them, Wilson.
Yes, sir. Well, they take a lot of thought. It's about time someone else drew them up.
Take it in turns, you mean?
Yes.
Good idea. Draw up a rotor.
A castle in Corsica originally was part of Napoleon's palace of the Tuileries in Paris. This is the castle which was burned by a French mob in 1871. After that fire, Duke Jerome Pozzo di Borgio, whose family had long feuded with that of Napoleon in Corsica, bought the debris and then spent $400,000 and 15 years rebuilding the castle. He did it simply to display a symbol of his victory over his old enemy, believe it or not.
And so, back I am, and we now have Dad's Army. I've been listening to... I just pulled the CD out of the case and loaded them all up on my MP3 player, wrapped it around my neck, pressed play, and I've been listening to something like, I guess, 72 episodes of Dad's Army, the radio show that was adapted from the TV show. And I just... It's just been entertaining as hell. It's been just... I'm just walking around with a permanent grin on my face, no matter what I'm doing, listening to this series about the Home Guard. Amazing as it is, amazing as it sounds, somebody was able to make comedy out of probably one of the most difficult periods in modern British history, and that being holding out as a country when Axis forces, when Nazi forces were trying to destroy it. Yeah, the Home Guard is the Dad's Army is based on a small town, local group of shopkeepers and businessmen gathering who were not, of course, who were either past their prime or weren't called up for military service and couldn't volunteer for whatever reason, forming the defense of their town. Quasi-military, paramilitary, military enough because the threats were real. But the comedy is just, it's just well done. I don't know which one I'm going to pick, so I can't tell you which one there is, but this sample that you're going to hear from Dad's Army will be shorter than the blathering I've just done about it. And I do hope you'll give it a try. Please enjoy this.
We place ourselves under cover, carefully concealed from the enemy.
Here, here.
We hear the tank coming, and as it draws level, the first man pours petrol over the blanket, breaks cover, and rushes up to the tank. That's you, Pike.
Who, me?
Yes, you. And you throw the blanket into the tracks. You got that?
Well, I think so, yes.
Then Lance Corporal Jones will run out and set fire to the blanket. Now, we're all clear so far.
Yes.
Now, you, Fraser.
Aye.
You will prise open the lid of the tank with a crowbar. Walker. Walker will have a petrol bomb in each hand. Lance Corporal Jones will light them and drop them into the aperture. Any questions?
Aye. What will you be doing?
I shall be observing from behind cover, deciding whether to send in the second wave. Now, before we start, the whole success of this operation depends on the decoy. Someone must take the attention of the tank crew away from us. Godfrey, you can be the decoy.
Oh, thank you very much.
Right. Now, let's try this through by numbers. Pike, yes? You go down into that corner over there with the blanket.
Right. Excuse me.
Fraser
Excuse
and Walker, me. Stand by with the crowbar and the petrol bombs.
Excuse me. Captain Mannering.
Oh, yes, sir.
I'm Major Smith.
Oh, how do you do, sir? You're just in time. We're about to start a dummy attack. Right, Godfrey. Stand over here. And Wilson, you...
What exactly are you going to attack, Mannering?
A German tank, sir. You see the diagram on the board.
Oh, is that what it is? I thought it was a trolley bus. Oh, do carry on.
Yes, sir. Now, Wilson, you're the tank.
Aye, sir.
Go to the end of the room. Stand by.
All right.
Off you go. Tank moves forward. Right, Godfrey, attract the tank's attention.
I say...
good. Gotta make them angry. Do it again.
I say you fascist beasts.
Come on, Hank, where's the blanket?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Manning. Sorry, I didn't hear the tank coming. No noise.
All right, no, stop. Stop everything. Now we'll start again. And this time, Wilson, try and make a noise like a tank.
I'm awfully sorry, sir, but I'm afraid I'm not really sure what sort of noise a tank makes.
Oh, of course you do. It's like a sort of... how would you describe it, Major?
Well, it's a sort of a rumbling sound.
There you are. It's a rumbling sound.
You know that? Oh, no, not really, sir. No, I haven't.
Oh, well,
really.
Just improvise then. All right, stand by. Off you go, tank.
Rumble, rumble.
Now, all together, please. Rumble, 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 rumble,
rumble. You fascist beast.
Get out the blanket, Pike.
This is my ring.
Well done, Pike. Now light the blanket, Jones. Jones, where's the flaming blanket?
In me flaming hand.
Well, get it to the tank. That's it. Put some beef into it. Come on, Fraser. Get in with the crowbar. Walk over with the petrol bombs. That's it. Oh, well done. Well done, men. Right, now you can all relax for a minute. Oh, what do you think about that, Major?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely top hole. Bags of enthusiasm, what? A little rough round the edges, perhaps, but we'll soon smooth those out when you come down to battle school, eh?
Oh, we're looking forward to it, sir.
Oh, jolly good. And I'm sure you'll all have terrific time. Loads of fun. See you at the weekend, what?
And that from Dad's Army. All right. Where are we at? We're at the Adam 5 musings portion of the podcast. This seems to be the spot where it all gravitated to. Any of my thoughts that weren't nailed down roll to here. We'll have closing music, of course. I don't know what it's going to be. Very likely it's going to be one of the pieces from the background music that you're listening to now. Without me talking all over it. A section of it that you can hear. But we're not there yet. First, I have to talk about ideal jobs. Funny, actually, to talk about ideal jobs when I don't have any kind of job. The dream job. The perfect job, the ideal job. My ideal job is very close to the musings that Fred Trellis had about musings in general. Sitting in a chair, drinking coffee and listening to audio, listening to podcasts, listening to old-time radio shows, maybe occasionally cruising along on the internet for a while, having a sandwich, maybe some soup, taking the dogs outside, bringing them back in, sitting down again, and repeating that. Reading some books. Crafting a few things out of clay. I've been doing that lately, crafting things out of clay. Making molds and pouring plaster into those molds. And then applying detail washes to that plaster once it's dried, and then sealing it all up, and then hanging it on my wall. I'll take some pictures. I'll post the pictures. Yeah, that'd be my ideal job. Maybe occasionally getting out of the house and doing some stand-up comedy for a group of 200 or 300 people. Maybe getting a couple of them on stage to participate in improvisational bits of comedy, and then having a nice dinner afterwards and then going home. I haven't done that in a very, very long time. Probably 91? Yeah, I think 91. Okay, so yeah, who would pay me to do that? That's not a real job. I think I stipulated that it had to provide some kind of a service to someone, some kind of a, it had to generate a good or a service. Since I've made a mold, I could generate, probably about 100 to 150 of those things a week, easily, at relatively low cost to me, because I know how, because I've developed, the skill to do it and experimented with lots of different things over time to make it work. This is not a skill that requires incredible amounts of talent, time, energy, and learning. It's something I could probably teach somebody in a day, less than a day, that whole clay crafting and mold making and plaster pouring thing. I could teach somebody to do that in a day. Took me a little bit longer than that to learn over time because I wasn't looking for help from anybody, and I probably should have. But that's something that qualifies as a hobby if you're doing it yourself, a livelihood if someone else is doing it. Because you hear these stories. You always hear these rags-to-riches stories of somebody that did something well, knew how to do it, was good at it, but it never went past their kitchen table until they decided to throw caution to the wind and quit their job and go to the bank and get a loan and write a business plan. And then, you know, a year later, 2 years later, they bought their second house. It's always fun to read those success stories. But it's also fun to read UFO reports. Are these people real? Does it actually happen that way? Does it actually work that way? What's somebody's hobby, what most people do as a hobby, some person or small group of people grab onto and make hundreds of thousands of dollars doing? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. The dilettante, the age of the dilettante, the jack of all trades, the educated middle class person, the Renaissance man, doesn't seem to be of any particular value lately. Not in terms of the job market, anyway. The job market seems to call for people that are experts with more than 5 years experience at a very tight focus of discipline. They're not looking for somebody that's computer literate. They're looking for someone that's computer literate and has worked for 10 plus years using their specific brand of software, their specific package. As a matter of fact, you probably get considered for a job more readily if you were, in fact, the person that wrote that software. I think that's what they're looking for. Yeah, I think you might have a chance at getting hired at some of these companies if you actually invented Java or SAP. It puts you in the running anyway. My ideal job, my ideal job would be performing on stage regularly, either as a stand-up comedian or in plays. The operative word there, though, is regularly. Ed May could certainly tell you that there is no such thing as a steady career in theater. The only reason he's been able to make it is because he worked his butt off like mad and has to do so constantly. It's not as if he can just ride along with the momentum of a massive corporation that just churns along like a juggernaut and either fails completely or trims its sails by downsizing. And you have to, of course, hope that you'll survive stuff like that, because that's happening like crazy all over the place. No, it's not as if you can work in that relatively predictable environment of, okay, at least I'll have forewarning. You can't project to the end of the year because you're spending the entire year reestablishing whatever rapport you have with the routes, the performance routes you take and places that you go. and looking for new bookings, always constantly looking for work. So half of your career is actually doing what you do best and enjoy most, and the other half is obtaining the opportunity to do it. What's good about that? Who can fire you? You are your own gig. I guess the same would go for that whole hobby thing. I'm looking at my little bits and pieces of statuary, my little bits and pieces of concrete wall hangings, and I'm thinking, this is something I can generate on my own. I can set how many I'm going to make, what the price would be. If I actually managed to find a place where they could be sold, I would have to sell somehow. I would have to manage to sell 10 of them a day. Perhaps. Yeah. In a 5-day work week, 10 of them a day, 50 a week. The trick is to actually find that place, go to that place where I could actually do that, where I could set these things out. Hell, if I had a regular place to go to day after day that had a high traffic, high walk-by traffic or gathering, whatever, for people, I'd stand in front of the damn thing and sing songs and juggle. I'd do a podcast while selling this stuff. And it would be my own gig. It would be my own thing. Who'd fire me? The only person that could take away my livelihood would be me, by not doing it. I wouldn't have to worry about waiting for that severance check, that little notice that says your services are surplus to requirements. A phrase that's been looping itself through my head since July of last year, actually since way before that, is from Blade Runner. The last line, one of the last lines, of the Rutger Hauer character. And that's to live in fear. That's what it is to be a slave. I find this applies. I find this to be true. Lack of confidence in your own future causes you to live in fear, whether you have a job or not. So there's a hell of a lot of fear going around. And hopefully it can be put to an end. Hopefully it can be dispensed with. Because we don't really have time for it. It's not helpful. I don't think it is anyway. Less fear is good. And this is one of the reasons why I recommend to people, if you can get away with it, stop watching the news. Stop logging into news sites. Don't even bother with the newspaper unless all you can grab and be able to see are the comics. Because I have never seen a more focused, concerted, concentrated effort to spread terror and panic in a population than I have seen over the past 4 or 5 months in the news media. They have latched onto the story of the economy, the world economy and the American economy and all the rest of this stuff. They've latched onto it like gorillas grabbing onto the wings of a butterfly, leaping at it and riding it to the ground. It's like, what is the worst possible news we can report on this? What is the darkest, bleakest, direst outlook we can give on this? And how many hours a day can we get away with reporting it without fear of losing the audience? Because we've got to get them back. We need to keep them in a constant state of steady panic and fear so that they'll always come back to find out what's coming to get them next. It's nauseating. It's making me sick. And if retailers were worried about their Christmas sales, they didn't need to worry. All they'd need to do is just watch the news and just shut up shop, sell out, and go home, because there was never going to be any frickin' hope. The news media. the reporting media, the journalists of the world, of America. Now, if the economy isn't tanking, we'll sure make sure it does. Stop watching that stuff. Just stop. And get out your high school yearbook and listen to Dad's Army. I'm going to put a link to a page where you can download every damn one of the Dad's Army radio shows that are available for free. That's what I'm going to do. That you'll find that in the Kutikatingatongatongs. Things were a hell of a lot worse than they are now. And so far as the United States is concerned, incredible things are still possible. One of the things I'm convinced of is one of the most powerful forces on Earth are a large number of people that are all working toward the same goal, that all want the same thing and are working towards it. That's partially what industrialized the United States and turned it into an economic power during World War II. The amount of industry, the production that was just churned out and churned out and churned out. The only thing that's even comparable to it would be what China has done in the past 15, 20 years. Yeah, America turned the entire country upside down in the war effort from 1941 to 1945. The entire nation on its ear transformed in attitude and action to produce, starting from very little comparatively, to produce armies and navies enough to assist in stopping a world conquest. And then 24 years later, landing on the moon. That was another thing. An immense amount of time, effort, and energy put into the conquest of space. And it was simply just people wanting it. Incredible things are possible. It's just a matter of time. What I'm hoping is that this new presidential administration, I can hope, might actually manage to wrestle the country back out of the hands of the crooks that have been milking us and betraying us. I don't know. I don't know whether that's the case. I don't know whether it'll just be a case of, well, it's a new sock on the same hand. It's a new sock puppet on the same hand. But that's counterproductive. That's bitter. That's not hopeful. And so I shouldn't say things like that. So I won't. Well, too late. I just did. Oh, ideal jobs. Right now, my ideal job would be the one that I can get to and perform for 40 hours a week without injuring myself physically and bring home enough money to not lose my house. That'll do for now. Or sell 50 little plaster wall hangings that I'll show you pictures of a week in combination of internet sales, because of course I'd set up a site where you could just buy them online, and some kind of a live market in-person thing where I could tout their virtues like a carnival barker, attracting the attention of people who were considering buying an electrical strip at one booth somewhere and come over to mine to look at what I have and decide, why, yes, Junior would like that. Yeah, that'd work too. That'd work better. I'm somewhat disappointed in episode 70, and it's mainly because of me. It took too long to come out. I allowed too much time to go by, and it had nothing to do with the gutter Skypes. It was me. The gutter Skypes are recorded in one evening with very fine people, and they're an entirely separate animal so far as the feed goes. This, simply put, is International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Hobbling a bit. Exhibiting symptoms of discouragement, which will pass, of course. hopefully the next episode will be less of a downer. because of me. Now, the input that I got, of course, certainly didn't was not in any way depressing. It was quite good, and I thank you all for it. Let's go to the music now. This is a piece from the album that you've been listening to as background music. Sorry about the wheel mouse scrolling that you're hearing. Here we go. Paul Berger, or Birgit, from the Siena Manuscript on steel string guitar, available at magnatune.com. This is one piece from that, one of the tracks. Hope you enjoy. And so there we have it. We have reached the end of episode 70. And I would, of course, like to thank, once again, Smallhoof. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Dan Leary. Thanks, Wes, for the good news about Terry Pratchett. Thank you, Kyle, for writing in. Thank you, Fred Trellis, for the forum post. Thank you for the audio, Ed May, the puppeteer. Thank you, Vandermore, for writing in. Thanks, Scooter Vagabond, for your input about the Gutter Skypes. And thank you, Zencor, for the same. I hope I haven't forgotten someone. That would be awful if I did. Of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us for... Oh, wow, what happened? Nearly reached it, and I didn't ask the question for episode 71. All right, I will self-serve. This will be Adam 5 being a grubby, grasping, selfish little turd. Or not. I don't know. It's the way I'm looking at it right now because I'm scrunchy-faced. I am a scrunchy-faced Adam right now. This is not a bad thing. This is a good thing. Let's say you had like a 5-inch by 5-inch or a little 6-inch by 6-inch square of wall or shelf or desktop or cubicle wall space that you could hang a little sculpture on, a wall-mounted flat hanging piece of sculpture on. It could be a covered bridge, or a duck, or an ancient symbol. Nothing too intricate, very simple, because my skills, I'm being obvious here, folks. I'm fishing for ideas, what would you like that to be? Now, this is totally serious. I'll give you examples. I'm looking at some that are on my wall right now. An eye of Horus, a skull, very simply the front face portion of a skull. Not an entire skull, but whatever. Simple, very simple. On a stone background, on a little stone tab that hangs on the wall. A yin and yang symbol, a trilobite, a Celtic cross. I remade a mold of the bust of Shakespeare. A lot of you folks out there are familiar with that. You've either gotten one yourselves, but the mold that I was making those with gave up the ghost 6 or 7 months ago. So I made a new one out of dragon skin silicone. Stuff like that. That kind of thing. What would you be interested in seeing? Celtic knots? That kind of thing? Let me know. That is the question for episode 71. What would you like cast in solid media, finished in gloss or matte, with a black detail wash or a simple brown, desert brown, placed on the wall? I'll put pictures up in the meantime so that you'll have an idea of what I'm talking about. What would you like to see sculpted? Here now also is an official insert added way, way later on, because I forgot about this. It doesn't have to be an object. It doesn't have to be a symbol. It doesn't have to be a scene or a picture. It can be a phrase. Preferably a one-sentence English phrase. I'll give you an example. The next piece that I'm going to be making is going to have the sentence, "My own little world is bigger than yours." Because a while ago, quite a while ago, actually, I overheard one of the designers say something about,
"Wow, he just sits over there in his own little world."
And I thought to myself, yes, well, my own little world is bigger than yours. I did a Google search for that phrase. I didn't find it anywhere. I am hereby now officially copywriting it. So it can be a sentence embellished with a twig or a leaf or a cross-hatched pattern motif, something like that. This is more along the lines of one of those t-shirt catchphrase competitions, but in this case it's dipped in stone, literally. Something solid as a rock that won't get brittle and age and crumble over time like plastic. Certainly won't be a forgotten item like a poster. I suppose that's one of the ways you could look at these things. 6-inch by 6-inch or 5-inch by 5-inch. Posters that you never lose and never throw away. I can visualize posters that were on the walls of my room in the 70s that are dust now, or in a landfill. I imagine you could do the same. How about a poster? How about something that's unique, something that represents an interest of your own, that's very simple, but isn't going to go away anytime soon, because it's made of stone. Anyway, that was it. That was the addition. It can be an English sentence. And this is not solicitation. I'm not expecting anybody to buy a damn thing here. Folks, let's get that clear, okay? I'm not putting on a commercial here. Ideas. Let me know. Okay. Thank you. That would be for episode 71. Whew, almost forgot it. All right, then. The torture will now end. I hope you'll join me for episode 71. That, of course, will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.